Hi, my name's Tori and I wish I knew more about blood products.
Hi, my name's Letitia. I wish I knew more about taking care of myself when starting shift work.
Hi, my name is Lydia. I wish I would know more about how to work as in a team and solve conflict.
Hello, welcome to Five Things, the nursing podcast from the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital. My name is Liz Crowe.
I'm Jesse Spur, and this is a podcast by, for, and with the amazing nurses and health professionals in our corner of the world. We hope to connect with a global community as we move from surviving to thriving. Welcome to Five Things.
Hello, my name is Liz Crowe.
And I'm Jesse Spur.
Welcome to another episode of Five Things. And today we've got something very special because we are welcoming Liz Wilkes, who is the Chief Midwife Officer for Queensland and the first Chief Officer of Midwifery for the whole country. Is that right, ever?
Yeah, that's right. That's the first in Australia. So that's really, really exciting.
Fantastic. Welcome.
Thank you.
Awesome. Now, whenever we get a guest that is the first in Australia, and I think you might be our first, so... That does follow the normal process of going, where did you start and how the heck did you get to this role?
Yeah, look, I think it's a funny sort of story really, because when I was really young, I used to say to people, I want to be a midwife. And to my whole family, I'd say, I just want to be a midwife. And people would say, does she even know what a midwife is? Like this little weenie thing. They'd say, does she mean a nurse? And I'd say, no, I mean a midwife. And they'd be like, oh my God, what's a midwife? And I'd say, it's the people that look after a woman having a baby. And so everyone used to laugh and think, oh my God, how does she even know that? So I feel like it was kind of there from the get-go. I did nursing to do midwifery, and then I have really followed a path of being clinician, but also being really interested in social justice and policy and all those kinds of things. So I spent a lot of time working with organisations like the College of Midwives and other professional bodies to sort of grow my muscle in policy outside of like state government health services. So it's been a kind of a really unusual pathway to being in a bureaucracy as the chief midwife and the first chief midwife for Australia.
Wow, congratulations. And for those of you who are our nursing audience, we really want you to hang in with us today because we think you're going to learn something much more about what midwifery is and where it's going in the future. So we encourage you to stay with us.
I think the other thing, and I just shared before we started, that my daughter is a dual degree nurse midwife that's starting her career right now as a new grad in ICU, but wanting to maintain work in midwifery. An observation I had watching her go through her training is that midwifery is fantastic at transmitting its professional culture, much more so than my experience has been in nursing. We're a bit more discombobulated about what our professional culture is.
Yeah, look, I think that midwives are really definite about midwifery. We're really definite about what it is that we're doing, our scope. We hold that profession really prominently in our sort of almost our being. So we can sort of transmit that to other people. That being said, I think I started as a nurse and I think the pathway from nursing into midwifery has been a little bit lost with the advent of Bachelor of Midwifery. And I think we need to bring that back because we are like, I say we're like sisters in a family, you know, like we've got lots of things in common. We can have big fights sometimes, but we actually have each other's back and we have lots more similarities than we have differences.
Yeah. That leads us so beautifully into our first point. What is a midwife?
Look, a midwife really is the person who is, or the group of professional people that are able to look after women through the perinatal period, and I guess across almost their childbearing and reproductive lifespan in many ways, because there's lots of things that people think, well, is that really midwifery, that sit in that sort of sexual and reproductive health space that might not be seen as traditionally looking after a pregnant woman, getting a baby out, looking after a woman in the first weeks after she's had a baby. You know, there's sort of different little segments. our journey actually runs right across the reproductive lifespan and involves all sorts of things like preconception care, sexual health care, even to, in some countries, care for women, you know, in menopause and circumstances like that. And I think it is that scope that brings with it so much, you know, rich opportunity for people that kind of want to be in that space with women and working alongside women in that journey of their reproduction.
And having birthed children myself, there is something, there's a connection with your midwife that is extremely powerful that you speak about decades later, whether you just met her momentarily at the last minute as you birthed or whether it's someone that you've had an intense relationship with. But especially with your first baby, it's something sacred.
It is something sacred. And I say it's, we talk about, you know, there's two things that are certain in life, death and taxes. Well, the one thing that's actually really certain in life is birth, because we're all born. We're not here if we're not born. And so we're on the precipice of that mystery every single day of our lives. So we are at that sort of coal face. And I think that that experience brings with it such a special opportunity as a health professional. And, you know, obviously there's lots of places that you feed into that, but the birth experience itself is magical.
Yeah, amazing. So number two is, what is the scope of practice for midwives?
Yeah, and look, I think this is one of the things I've seen in one of your other podcasts, that you're aware that there's a scope of practice review. And I think that for health professionals in 2024, we're looking at a scope of practice that really extends from preconception care through pregnancy and looking after women through that sort of period of pregnancy, through their labor and birth, and to about 6 weeks after birth. Now, there's a push that says that midwives really have the skills to actually extend that into sort of the first 1,000 or even the first 2,000 days. So at the moment, most of our care ends at 6 weeks in Australia, but internationally, there are countries where that scope extends to, you know, far, far further than that. And the International Confederation of Midwives definition of a midwife includes all of the child health spectrum and also the reproductive life cycle spectrum. So contraception, education about many of the other things that women experience.
And are all midwives also then experts at lactation, or is that a different thing again?
So as part of a midwife's journey, they always learn about lactation consultancy, lactation services, but they're not actually got the skills as a lactation specialist. So a lactation consultant is someone who's done additional education to just specialise in breastfeeding. But every single midwife learns about breastfeeding in their education at university. And obviously some of them then choose to, you know, specialise in postnatal services. They can specialise in all kinds of different things. So breastfeeding is just one of them.
I was really curious to hear you in the beginning there talking about potentially the role of midwives in menopause or perimenopause. Is that something that you think could be an extension of scope of practice in the future?
Look, I do think that it could be. We've got endorsed midwives at the moment who are midwives who've done 3 years of clinical practice and then a prescribing course, and they actually have access to a Medicare provider number. So they can prescribe under the PBS, they can order blood tests and all kinds of things like that. Menopause care really falls within that sort of remit, much like a sexual and reproductive a nurse practitioner would sort of work in a similar space. So there's a lot of crossover in those two sort of scopes of practice. And I definitely think when we're looking at everyone working to their top of scope or full scope, that midwives could definitely be in that space.
This is embarrassing, but I have been watching Better Call the Midwife.
Oh my God.
On TV. Well, I've been ironing because it's not something my husband wants to watch. I cry nearly every episode. You know, we looked at that midwives did have such a dominant role really in the birthing of babies, that then retracted back with, you know, more and more medical staff. In places like Australia, where we have lots of rural and regional areas, how prominent are midwives, or where do you think that will go?
So look, the role of a midwife as in the primary care space is having a massive resurgence. And again, the workforce issues that we're facing in rural and remote areas is probably the main driver of that. But the other thing that's a really significant driver of that is the evidence around midwifery continuity of care. So midwifery continuity of care is where the same midwife looks after you from early in pregnancy right through your birth until your baby is 6 weeks old. So they're on call for you. And that particular option or model is really prevalent now in Australia in rural areas because it's the most efficient way to staff midwifery services or maternity services in rural and remote areas. So we're seeing a real resurgence of that. I mean, they're not obviously on bikes.
I was going to say, are they riding their bicycles?
Look, there was a consumer advocate many years ago who was waiting for the day that they're all on bikes or electric bikes rushing around, you know, every town. But no, they're not on bikes, but they're still doing that same. They're based in a community. The community actually knows them, knows how to get hold of a midwife, and they're kind of doing that same journey as they are on call the midwife. So I have a little giggle when I watch it because there's so many similarities and crossovers.
Yeah, terrific. Okay, so your number three is midwifery a feminist issue?
So midwifery is definitely a feminist issue. It is all about the women. I think that's the thing that's really interesting because back to my first story about me wanting to be a midwife, people used to say, oh, you want to be a midwife because you really love babies. And I'd said, no, I want to be a midwife because, you know, I want all women to have the best experience. And it is a feminist issue in that the care and everything that you do is centered around the woman and the woman's journey. Obviously, her family and the people that are beside her and her baby are equally important. But the decisions that she makes and the sort of concepts around bodily autonomy, consent and control are all so important. And I think the advocacy in this space has really focused on making sure that women are getting what they're asking for. And you know, we're seeing that. They're voting with their feet and governments are also changing policy around midwifery as a result of that.
Over the years, I know there's been like maternity coalitions and quite a strong advocacy from women, often prompted by being unhappy of their own birthing experience. Is there still a drive from that from the community, or is this sitting within midwives or a combination?
No, there's still a massive drive in the community. So recently, New South Wales had the first inquiry into birth trauma in Australia, and there's a really undercurrent of concern around, I suppose, women having a level of expectation about their care and what they're going to get from their care and possibly not receiving that. They want to have a say, and I guess that means that they want practitioners, health providers, that are actually going to give them a say. So midwifery sits really nicely in that space because women-centered care is important. But I think it's the consumers that are driving what it is that they want really strongly into the advocacy arena.
And men can be a very powerful part of that, can't they?
Oh, look, I mean, when I'm saying women, you know, it's a whole of life experience, you know, being pregnant and having a baby and being new parents. So it's not just isolated to what's going on for the woman. It is very much what's going on for anyone that's in that space with her. So whatever form of partner she might have or not, or family members, you know, it's very much driven by the consumer, if I want to, you know, use a word, the consumer experience. And men are a very big part of that.
Do you have many male midwives?
My previous work place of work where I've just come from, I was managing a midwifery organisation, and we had one of our clinical managers was a male midwife. And I think initially women would be like a male midwife, but when you look at it, there's so many male obstetricians and gynecologists that they get used to it. But so yeah, there are a very small cohort of male midwives. and they usually have a fairly strong agenda about what they're doing. Often they're very, very passionate advocates and into that sort of social justice space.
I can attest to that, obviously, as a minority within nursing, not to the same degree as in midwifery, but it's a deliberate career choice rather than a passive kind of, oh, well, I've got a couple of gendered career norms that a lot of women tend to fall into. Been talking to my female colleagues?
Yeah, I think definitely in midwifery even more than nursing, because in nursing you can kind of see that there are opportunities for the kind of, you know, jump in a helicopter and go and do a retrieval, or, you know, go into an ICU and it's all, you know, hands on deck. In midwifery, it's very much at times almost a passive monitoring, kind of being with people experience, particularly sort of when you're in the birthing space and in the early breastfeeding space. So men do have to kind of, they have to have a particular way of being to be comfortable in that space. And you find that the male midwives that are in the space are usually really, really good at it. And they've decided to take that career option because they, you know, have certain characteristics that set them up well for it.
Your number four is priorities for midwifery today and into the future. So this kind of goes into the scope of practice, but also just like what do you see? What do you want to see, I guess, in terms of where midwifery is today and then in the future?
Look, I think that midwives are really well shaped, as I said, to move into that primary care space. And some of the, I don't know, I suppose the constructs around us as a profession and the way that we provide care come from the way that our system is set up. So, you know, we're very much set up to sort of have, in Australia particularly I'm talking about, but, you know, primary care in the GP space funded in a particular way, birth care, you know, from a midwifery perspective, and secondary care in the hospital space. And then, you know, tertiary care, it's really fragmented, and maternity care suffers a lot from that because it means that the care gets quite fragmented. So the model that I was talking about with midwifery continuity of care needs to stretch across those funding spaces and almost those structures that have been created from a GP and hospital perspective. Look, I don't think we're there yet, but we're certainly seeing within health services, the thinking around funding and thinking around employer models and all those kinds of things, trying to shape the way that we can move towards best evidence-based care, which is the midwifery continuity of care model that I was talking about before.
And I guess that's from a service development point of view, but there's also like a rapidly changing, I guess, social environment and context around women's health issues, which just coming back to the, is midwifery a feminist issue and male advocacy? I just wanted to touch on a really great retort to a women's health comment that our male premier made last week when there was some public questioning about the legitimacy of spending on endometriosis clinics. And he said to the male who was asking the question, when you get endometriosis, we'll help you get an appointment, which I thought was fantastic. So I guess that public space advocacy stuff, but then also there's a wrestle around changing social norms as well. One particular thing I wanted us to self-monitor a little bit, I guess, was we're using women consistently when talking about people having birth. Where is that within your profession in terms of gender and sex differentiation when we're talking about birthing now?
Absolutely, because obviously recognizing that I am using the word woman and I am using it in the sexed meaning of a female or a person with a uterus, obviously we have a number of people that do not identify as a woman having babies. We have a growing cohort of people that have non-identification, non-binary, don't identify a particular gender. And we also have people that identify as men having babies. So it is something that we check in on. I guess the thing for me is that in doing that, we don't want to lose the fact that we also have predominantly women having babies. And there's a great tussle in midwifery about that. And even the use of language, you know, trying to our national strategy for maternity care is called woman-centered care in maternity services. And, you know, there's been a push of do we change that to person-centered care in maternity services? I can't see that. I can't see that at the moment. I recognize that we need to be really sensitive and we really need to shape services so that they are person dependent and able to be utilized by all of anyone that is having a baby. But I think that the very idea that we can't identify women as women at all in that space when it is predominantly women in that space is we might go a step too far. So we've got to be very, very careful about how we sort of walk through that precipice. And I think that's going to be a growing issue in the future.
Yeah, really.
I think like it sounds like the open curiosity is the starting point and just being open to feedback and hearing what people have to say and their experiences is the best place that we can possibly be right now.
I totally agree. And I think that that's something that, you know, midwives generally are, you tend to find that people from all walks and journeys in life seek out midwifery care because it is centered on the individual that's in front. It's not a sort of a system based, you're going to follow these sorts of principles. So I think that's a good place to start as much as anything.
Talking about the future and changing the conversation again, like with the introduction with all sorts of AI and much more mobile devices, I imagine, for doing monitoring, what could the future look like for midwives based on that? Like, is there anything crazy, interesting happening in the AI space?
There's certainly some crazy, well, not crazy perhaps, but some interesting things around tools that are defining risk and tools that are defining how to make decisions around women's care, and particularly where women are located at a distance from their care providers or from services. There's lots of, I won't name any of the tools, but there's lots of tools being sort of developed with algorithms that you put information in about a whole range of things and it tells you what decisions should be being made. Now that's pretty, I mean, that's not AI and it's a pretty basic level, but some of the algorithms in the background of that are making decisions that are almost kind of life and death decisions. So you've got to be pretty, you know, pretty confident in them. And there are some that are really creating a change in the way that we can monitor the well-being of mothers and babies. There's also a whole suite of portable monitoring processes, so things that you can stick onto a woman's belly to monitor a baby at a distance. There's, you know, lots of different processes and devices that can monitor things like, you know, blood sugars from miles and miles away and control all of those sorts of things. We're seeing those in, you know, routine nursing care and trauma care, general care. But they're kind of more difficult to sort of get into the midwifery space, I guess, in a way, because you've got two people to consider. You've got a mother and you've got a baby, and the baby can't be seen by anybody at that particular point in time. It's, you know, in utero. So it takes on a whole new other way of thinking that sort of defies, you know, there's all sorts of ethical conversations, all kinds of stuff.
I love the fact that you reflected on the future stuff by actually looking at about the principles and ethics and foundations of really an equity base. When we say is midwifery a feminist issue, there's obviously a bent towards equity that's naturally inherent to midwives. What we're sort of seeing, my other job, working with retrieval services, I've got a front seat view to a massive and rapid expansion of expert level midwifery support being provided via telehealth. And that's a service that's wrestling with its own growth right now. What other stuff is out there?
Yeah, look, I think that equity piece that we're talking about, we could go into a whole separate conversation, particularly around the health of First Nations mothers, babies and families, which is another passion that has completely absorbed me for a few years. But in terms of the services that we can provide via tele and virtual health is growing absolutely exponentially with the ability to have centres that are quite distant from retrieval services or whatever, being monitored and supported by midwives and obstetricians and other health professionals in sort of cities. And that just not, people sort of think of telehealth as, you know, someone, one person on the end of a phone, someone on the other end of a phone. You know, we're talking about things like having cameras over resuscitation beds so that while somebody's resuscitating a newborn or giving some sort of support to a newborn, that they're getting advice via the person that's actually in the retrieval services area. And those expansions really do support the provision of care in those rural and remote areas, because we don't have enough people to put, you know, specialist neonatologists in Cooktown or wherever. We've got to be able to make the best of the workforce that we've got. And I definitely think that virtual and telehealth options are really expanding that ability.
So your final number five point is, you know, I guess we're curious to know, what can midwives expect from you as the very first chief midwife in Australia?
Nothing like an overwhelming question on week seven of the job. Look, I think that my main philosophy as a midwife and as a person is to stick to my values and to look at what I can do to improve the situation for midwives across the country, and not just Queensland, but Queensland front and foremost. The things that I'm really passionate about, and I just alluded to one of them, are ensuring that we've got equity and looking at what's available for First Nations mothers and babies, and the Growing Deadly Families program that I'm actually is part of my accountable programs is one of the things that I feel just, you know, incredibly passionately about. I would like to see that available to every single First Nations mother in the country, and I would like to see that expanded from Queensland perspective to other jurisdictions. I also think that for the midwifery, so that's for women, I suppose, then for the midwifery workforce, I think that midwifery leadership hasn't been particularly visible. In fact, midwives in some ways are not all that visible. Everyone still calls us nurses and, you know, we get the nurse that was in here, and that's fine to a certain extent, but in terms of the professional ethos that we talked about earlier, you know, midwives are very passionate about who they are as a profession. And I think seeing distinct leadership by myself and then by a growing cohort of specific midwifery leaders across the state and then potentially across the nation will give them the ability to grow into their profession, grow their professional wings, think about career progression, think about how they're able to impact the care that they're providing, the models that they've got available to them, all kinds of things. And I mean, leadership is just so critical. And I think most of the midwives that are working in Queensland today, you know, really are looking for leadership to support them through sort of what possibly feels like pretty difficult times in some ways.
Okay, so I'm now going to attempt to summarise this, and I want to keep it deliberately nice and concise because you've spoken so beautifully to us today. So what is a midwife? Essentially, it's a person or a group of professionals who look after women during the perinatal, reproduction and sexual health space through to childbirth and beyond. And I really love that you said you're at the precipice of the mystery and it's about being with. And that's what I really heard. It's about being with the person who's birthing. Number two is, what is the scope of practice of a midwife? And I think this is a growing space, but essentially, you know, it starts in preconception care. It goes through to pregnancy, labor and birth, and within the first 6 weeks of postpartum. However, culturally, this does vary. And for some midwives, that's extended to the first 1,000 or 2,000 days. And it's really about this continuity of care. Number three, is midwifery a feminist issue? And yes, is the short answer to that. It is centered around the woman or the person who is birthing and their journey. And it's really about consent, autonomy, and advocacy. Number four is priorities for midwifery today and into the future. And there is a number of priorities. I guess first and foremost is this sufficient workforce, which we are seeing globally for nursing and midwifery. You spoke about rural and regional responsibilities and this whole concept of equity And that obviously includes our First Nations people and their babies and children. You spoke about the growing ethics and discussions that need to happen and about remaining really open and curious and responsive to the changing norms in our society about how people identify, what a family is, who is birthing, et cetera. And your number five, I think, you know, what people can expect from you as the first chief midwife. Like, we've only known you for an hour. I think it'll be value-based responsiveness, a philosophy, a passion, and, really trying to address all the many challenges and opportunities that lay ahead for your profession. How'd I go?
Fantastic. I think that's great.
It's been an absolute delight to have you here today, Liz, and I personally look forward to seeing what you do with this role. And thank you very much for joining us on Five Things.
Thanks for having me here.
The Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital Five Things Nursing Podcast acknowledges the Turrbal and Yuggera as the First Nations owners of the lands we now tread. We pay respect to their elders, laws, customs, and creation spirits. We recognise that these lands have always been places of healing, teaching, and learning. We also wish to acknowledge the First Nations people of the lands of our global community and encourage our listeners to seek out, listen, and learn from the knowledge held in your shared space. As well as all major podcast outlets, you can find us at fivethingsnursing.podbean.com. Please also subscribe and give us a rating on your listening platform of choice. This helps others find the podcast. And finally, if you'd like to connect with Liz or myself on Twitter, we can be found at LizCrow2. And for me, it's inject_orange. We would absolutely love to hear your thoughts, ideas, or feedback. Thanks for listening to Five Things,